Good afternoon, everybody. This is Barb Pello, Group Director of InfoTrends, and I'm delighted that you could join us for our webinar today titled Building New Revenue Streams, sponsored by OSEI, part of the Canon Group. I think we all know that service providers are transforming the way marketers approach paper-based e-campaigns, mobile, and social media by integrating services that add focus, speed, and value to marketing communications initiatives. What we're seeing are service providers that are starting to provide a consultative approach that drives market solutions that result in both mutual profitability and growth. Today, I'm joined by two tremendous service providers in the marketplace. The first is Deborah Haskell, and she's the Vice President of Marketing for IWCO Direct. And the second is Frank Oliveri, and he's the President and COO of Williams Lee Americas. And what they're going to be doing is sharing with you how they've positioned their organizations as leaders in integrated marketing services through innovative approaches and partnerships with employees, customers, and suppliers. What I've asked them to do is share business process decisions for moving into new integrated marketing services, talk about the tools that were essential for their success and how they've re-engineered business processes, talk about the unique value proposition that they're delivering to their customers, the impact on both current and future business revenues, and then actually wrap up with making some recommendations to you and your peer, their peers in the industry. Now, before we get started, what I do want to do is just take a minute to make sure that you've got some tips for successfully enjoying today's webinar. If you're having any technical difficulties, let us know by using the Q&A box, or you can troubleshoot by clicking on the help widget. We'll be taking questions throughout the course of the session today. So if you've got a question, please key it in the Q&A tab, and we'll respond to it as they come in. Make sure that you disable pop-up blockers, and if you want to see what the console can do, you can click on the Tips for Attendee widget for a complete rundown. Now, for our agenda today, I'm going to spend a few minutes sharing with you some research that InfoTrends did on new revenue opportunities as people move into the world of cross-media. Then you'll hear from Deborah and Frank about how they're actually offering and delivering new services to the marketplace. And finally, we'll wrap up with a few recommendations and conclusions. And again, we'll be taking your questions throughout the course of the session today. Now, first of all, I think one of the big messages out in the marketplace is that service providers understand that it's time to get into the cross-media game. InfoTrends did a study titled The Evolution of the Cross-Media Marketing Services Provider. We actually went out and talked to 285 print-for-pay companies. What they told us was that 58% of them were actually offering some form of cross-media services. And we defined those as working with marketers on campaigns where they used two or more channels as part of the communications process. What was also interesting was that nearly 87% of the respondents were either offering cross-media services or had plans to start offering them within the next 24 months. Only 13% of the respondents had no plans to offer cross-media services. Now, the other big message is that people are voting with their dollars. When you take a look at how many people are investing in cross-media and customized communication solutions, what you're seeing is that the biggest increase in terms of growth in investment come from multi-channel communications, come from e-enablement, come from personalized variable data, and graphic arts variable data. So what that says is, people are truly voting with their dollars. The other thing is, and in some instances, what they're doing is they're building their way in. In other instances, what we're seeing are organizations that are buying their way in. And it cuts across the gamut from big to small companies. For instance, Vistaprint recently procured, or last December, procured Webs, Inc. And it's a popular do-it-yourself suite of website services and Facebook pages and mobile presence solutions for small and medium businesses. You saw organizations like R.R. Donnelly acquire Libra Digital, and you saw BG3 acquire the Ace Group, all in pursuit of doing a better job at building out and expanding their cross-media portfolio capabilities. And so the simple message is that the game's on. Service providers understand that offering cross-media services is no longer an option. What they're doing is they're looking for tools and techniques to build, buy, or partner, but they don't want to wait. We also asked the same group of people what types of cross-media services they were currently offering to their customers. And from the chart, you can see that there's a pattern and evolution taking place. Most companies got started with variable data, as well as online web storefronts. They're moving into the world of digital asset management. You're also seeing emphasis as you look at the marketplace in terms of data and metrics. And they're beginning to understand the importance of things like data preparation, data list acquisition, personalized URL tracking and reporting. And while they're not as proficient as data analytics and setting up campaigns and database programming, there's clearly a well-defined intent to start moving in that direction. You're also seeing a migration in terms of online services. They're adding email, web, and personalized URL capability to their portfolio services. And the next big thing, or the next major phase, and you'll see the yellow bars representing areas of planned growth, are the ability to add mobile to the mix. And what we've heard a lot about QR codes, what we're finding is that 58% are actually doing mobile 2D barcode generation and tracking, and you're seeing a migration into mobile SMS and text capabilities, as well as mobile application development. Now, there's a simple reason for all of this, and that is bottom line revenue results. And we ask these service providers the top reasons in terms of adding new services and cross-media capability, the message was a simple one. It was the ability to generate new revenue. It was the ability to expand their customer base and to differentiate themselves from their competitors in the marketplace. And when we talk about new revenue streams, what we discovered as we talked to these service providers was that, oh, by the way, they were generating incremental revenue from new services. And, in fact, we asked them about what percent of your operations revenue is from cross-media services. The mean was almost 10%. But of equal importance was the concept that they were not just generating incremental revenue from cross-media, but what these cross-media players saw was that not only did it have a positive impact on overall revenue from cross-media, but it also increased their digital print revenues. And, in fact, the digital print revenue volumes were up 13.3%. So the simple message is that cross-media really has a very positive impact in terms of not just new sources of revenue linked to generation of pearls, new websites, web-to-print, but it also has an increase in digital page volume. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn over to Deborah Haskell, and she's going to share with you how IWCO has built and expanded their business portfolio and really the positive impact that it's had on generating new revenue. And, again, folks, make sure you keep questions coming in. We'll take them throughout the webinar. So, Deborah, take it away.
Thanks, Barb, and thank you to OSTE for sponsoring this session. Barb asked us to just spend a minute or two. We like to think that IWCO Direct is a household name for everyone, but recognizing that that may not be the case, in 8 short words, IWCO Direct is an end-to-end provider of direct marketing solutions, and by that we mean we bring the whole process from creative through actually delivering through a number of channels today, used to be just paper-based, but through a number of channels, we're helping clients deliver their marketing messages. Barb said a couple of minutes ago that data was king. Everything we do is driven by data, and that data is getting more and more complex in terms of feeding the acquisition, loyalty, and engagement programs that we do for our clients. Most of the work that we do traditionally has been on the acquisition side. What we're finding is that we play a key role in helping our customers first acquire a customer and then build loyalty with that customer, keep that customer engaged through the entire customer life cycle, help our clients bring more share of wallet. Our revenue in 2011 was about $390 million, and Printing Impressions says that that makes us the largest direct mail printer in North America. We have manufacturing and distribution locations in Minnesota and in Pennsylvania. We have an industry-leading postal strategy that helped us become the biggest direct mail printer. We do that by putting 4 billion pieces of mail in the mail stream every year. And when we acquired the U.S. assets of Transcontinental Direct in 2010, one of the best things that came with that acquisition was a company called MailGuard, which focuses on critical communications recovery. We've added that to the IWCO Direct services that we offer. And like many of you on the phone today, our facilities operate 24/7, and there are about 2,500 employees that keep those buildings going. I want to talk a little bit about the transformation of IWCO Direct, how we built those new revenue streams. In 2001, we had about $83 million in revenue, 250 customers, 23 salespeople. IWCO wasn't IWCO then. It was Instant Web, and it was a family-owned company. We were the sixth largest direct mail printer at that time. And the reason that people did business with Instant Web was all about pricing. And that's not a good thing. We did a customer satisfaction survey back in 2000 that told us that people did business with us because our prices were so low that they would put up with things just to get those low prices. And we knew that that was not a recipe for growth, for certainly not for sustainable growth. We really focused on bringing a different kind of solution to the market. In 2012, IWCO Direct has 118 customers, so we have half as many customers, but we are just shy of $400 million in revenue. We have fewer salespeople than we did in 2001, which means that our salespeople are managing larger pieces of business. Instead of being a family-owned company, we're now owned, the majority share of the company is owned by private equity. We're the largest direct mail printer, as we said on the previous slide, and it's really our platform and the solutions that we can provide that drives our sales volume. Obviously, we have to offer competitive pricing, but in terms of being that lowest price solution, that's not what we think really drives the best value for us or for our clients. And talk a little bit about the marketing trends,
Deborah,
that really...
Deborah, I have a question for you before you move on to this next slide. It looks like you fired some of your customers. This is from one of our participants. Did you fire your customers or did they fire you?
Our customers, we had to fire our customers. And when we started that process back in 2000 and 2001, what we looked at was where we were delivering value. And we had an opportunity, really, to look at whether or not the customers that we had, and the customers that we fired primarily were doing work with us once a year. It was one project. It wasn't a program. It was very transactional. It was very commodity-based. And we determined, and this was a pretty scary thing to do, but we determined that it was best to exit those customers, and we had to make sure that we had a good exit strategy, that we weren't leaving them hanging, but really look at how we could deliver value to our customers and make sure that the customers we were working with continued to make sense for us and for them.
And one other quick question that came in while you were talking is, salespeople, you went from 23 to 16, obviously covering fewer customers. Did you change any of those salespeople when you moved into more value-added selling, or are they the same salespeople and did you retrain them? What did you do to make those salespeople more effective?
There is one salesperson that was with us in 2001 who's still with us today, And the reason for that is really or prior to 2001. I think there are three that are with us from 2001. But really it was about changing the selling strategy from a pricing-based solution to looking at a consultative sell. And that's not something that every salespeople could make that transition. In terms of looking at how you train somebody to be a consultative salesperson, and you'll see this in a later slide, about really looking to skills versus talent, consultative selling truly is a talent. We can provide some tools to learn how to be a consultative salesperson, but that's a bit of a you're born with it or you're not, we think. One of the things that we look at closely is marketing trends that are impacting our business. There's a duality facing marketing professionals today because consumers have unprecedented mobility and social connectivity. They're looking, instead of just looking at one screen today, they're looking at four or five. That could be desktop, laptop, smartphone, tablet, and they may be looking at more than one screen at one time. The preferred channel for communication with friends and family differs from, and this is one of the biggest challenges we face today in our customers' face, the challenge is understanding how people want to communicate. The channel for friends and family is different in many cases than the channel with marketers. Direct mail and email index much, much higher for marketing communications, where text, the good old-fashioned phone and social networks drop dramatically when it comes to marketing communications. And in a nutshell, what happens there is just because consumers embrace a channel for communicating with friends and family, Facebook, for example, doesn't mean that they're ready for marketing messages for somebody to sell to them through Facebook. And that's one of the things that we're really trying to understand now and help our customers understand. One of the things that's exciting to us, because it's the foundation of our business, is that there is still life out there for direct mail. It's the only channel where unsolicited messages are not viewed as inappropriate. They're not considered intrusive. Direct mail is a great way to get a foot in the consumer's door and then understand what their channel preferences are to determine whether they want to continue to receive paper-based communication, whether they like email, whether they like text messaging, or maybe even have provided permission for those social networks. One of the things we found through some participation in focus groups, some of the work that the Postal Service has done to study these behaviors, is that consumers really do continue to embrace what the Postal Service calls the mail moment, where they appreciate the tangibility and the tactility of direct mail, the flexibility, and the fact that they can deal with it on their own terms. It's really hard to ignore a ringing phone. It's hard to ignore a text message. Those are great channels for alert-based communications. And what we're finding is that users of social networks are really on the fence about whether or not they want to open those channels to marketers. We've learned a lot of this through the Exact Target channel preference study that was released a couple of months ago. Back to IWCO Direct, the way that we've made sense of this, the way that we've experienced such dramatic growth, is looking at our core areas of expertise and talking about them and how they benefit our customers. First is offering proven technology platforms for the most relevant direct mail options. It's not just about personalization anymore. It's really about relevancy. Focusing on high speed and in-house production, being able to offer the lowest per piece postage cost to help improve that ROI, looking at speed to market. How can we compress the cycle time to get those marketing communications into people's hands faster and so that our clients can read the results and determine what to do next? We offer a creative design that's really focused on delivering the best ROI, the best return on investment through dynamic content and relevant messages. Again, it's not just personalization, it's relevance, and it's relevance across all channels. It's not just in paper-based communications. And in order to do all that, we have to make sure that our clients can sleep well at night by offering robust data security and robust physical security. That's a key element of what we do today. The value proposition. Yes?
I got a quick question, Deborah, before you move on to the value proposition. You've got those core areas of expertise. If you go back to 2001 and you look at today, how did you acquire the necessary skills and talent to fulfill that customer demand for cross-media services?
I think it's a great question, and I will say that it was not easy, and I'm not trying to imply, and no one should infer that it is easy. A couple of different things we do. We have a great, in order to really understand what's driving customer needs, and most important, what those unmet needs are, because being able to answer an unmet need is even more important than somebody saying, I need you to do this, and we do it. When we can identify what's behind some of that that somebody may not have thought about yet, that's really critically important. We do a lot of customer satisfaction research. We talk to our customers on a regular basis through might be a quarterly business review, might be twice a year, really talking to our customers about what's driving them strategically and what are the tactical things that we can do to help that. Keeping our salespeople, keeping our management team really, really involved in those decisions, sharing that kind of information across the enterprise, those are the things that have allowed us to make the transition from really just focused on selling commodities to selling solutions.
And as a piece of this, one of the other questions that came in, Deborah, was do you offer data analytics services?
We work with a partner to offer data analytics services. Some of what we do on the platform, there are analytics capabilities, but in terms of that being part of our expertise, we rely on a partner for that, and we think that's the best solution.
Okay. So, but you offer it as a service, but you just do it through a partner. Is that the best way of describing what you do?
That's the best way to describe it.
Okay. Great. Thanks.
Okay. The value proposition, really five things, because it makes it easy for us to count on one hand. First is service. That has to be part of what we do. Second is impactful design. So it's not design that wins awards. It's design that influences response, that gets the paper-based packages opened, that gets an email opened. Those kinds of things are what we really focus on, not just delivering pretty pictures. Program execution, if we can't get that program done correctly and in the following the service level agreements, the time frames that our clients need, then we can't be successful. Really focusing on expertise and leadership in the industry, that we want to be the first person that a client calls or a prospect calls when they have a question about something, and being able to deliver measurable results, because if you can't measure it, you can't improve it. Some of the strategic implications for new revenue for us were really to focus on our core capabilities as part of looking to the multi-channel, or some people refer to it as cross-channel or integrated world that exists today, not abandoning what we do best, not abandoning the foundation, but looking at how we can build on that. Some of that we do is through maximizing the per-piece spend on that paper-based communication through postal optimization and data hygiene. Looking at workflows and automation tools that improve efficiency, improve accuracy, and make our clients more efficient at what they're doing, because most of the time they have fewer people doing it than they did 2 years ago, 5 years ago, and especially 10 years ago. One of the toughest things that we had to recognize is that not everything automatically translates into the digital world. And we can't be successful if we expect to take what worked in an offset printing environment and say, now let's take the very same workflow and tools and try to do digital work with them. It's not a recipe for success. In some cases, it's a recipe for disaster. really looking at segment knowledge and understanding our clients' business and how we can build that, and again, how we can be a partner with our customers, helping customers understand new technology and how to use it. There's such exciting new technology out there, but our customers are telling us, hey, we've always had to operate within this framework with these rules. Help us understand what the possibilities are now and how we need to change our behavior, our workflow, our expectations in order to take the fullest advantage of that new technology. You kind of touched on this earlier when Barb asked about the salespeople, that skills can be taught, but talent really is innate. And I think in many cases, talent should and can be exploited, that there are certain things that, you know, especially when it comes to a salesperson, you can't teach someone how to sell. You can teach them how to use their time better. You can teach them how to develop, marketing communication to help their clients, those kinds of things. But that innate ability to sell is something they're born with, and it's really tough to teach somebody who isn't a salesperson how to do that. The business transformation that we experienced was really done through being able to offer a full range of capabilities to support our customers' marketing programs and understanding, again, that's where those unmet needs come in. One of those was developing a creative services team that was really focused, that is really focused on response and conversion and an effective cost per piece. So it's about how can we automate this piece to run most efficiently on our platform. We don't do creative that we don't do the production for. That's not what we're doing. We're trying to make the pieces that we produce as effective as possible, collaborating with customers at every turn in process management, and again, being able to measure that. And our customer satisfaction surveys show that we rank highest in the five areas that our customers say are most important to them. And what we realize going into those surveys is that we have to measure importance at the same time we measure satisfaction, because if we're really good at stuff that doesn't matter, it just doesn't matter. When we talk about expertise and leadership, we're really talking about four things: being responsive to market changes, actively mentoring within our company, our community, and the industry, developing a reputation and trust in us and confidence in our ability to do the job and do it right and do it on time and on budget. And that isn't something that's done overnight. That's something we've done over 40 years that we've been in business. And last but not least, and this is newer, this is something that we've really focused on heavily in the last 5 or 7 years, is respect for the environment. Our platform is inherently environmentally friendly because we're doing everything on one campus. That means we waste less, we use fewer packaging materials, we're not moving materials from, we don't have additional freight costs because everything is being done on one campus. And there's a real value there that's very important to many of our clients and to us. Measurable results. Again, we can't improve what we don't measure. And what we found, and we think this is really exciting, our clients have told us that direct mail really does enhance the performance of other marketing channels. So they've tested pulling out of direct mail and looking at the results in other channels, whether that's search, whether that's email, whether that's text messaging, and they found that when they pull back on direct mail, it has a negative impact on the other channels. We're really excited about that. We think that's really valuable information to share, and we want to talk about ways to make direct mail have a greater measure of effectiveness on our clients' marketing across all channels. We focus on our postal strategy because that's something that's really, it's easy to measure. What did that piece cost in the mail? When did it get there? Are we able to get clients' mail to the recipient faster and at the lowest possible cost than our competitors or than our clients were doing through other programs? And again, our creative services team focuses on a challenger to champion model, And with 9 of our top 10 clients, they're running packages or have run packages that were designed by IWCO Direct. And I'm going to wrap up with the strategy recommendations that Barb asked us for. First is really to seek, attain, and retain the best customers in the industry. And one of the things that we've learned is that we're stronger because our customers are strong. Commanding a leadership position with our existing customers and looking to create that leadership position with prospects has been really instrumental in growing our business. It's the old Jack Welch model of being number one or number two. And part of that is really being, you know, I said this earlier, is being the first call that somebody makes when they have a question. We want that call to come to IWCO Direct. Selling solutions, not transactional stuff, not commodities, not just products, but really looking at selling solutions beyond what we did 10 years ago and really looking at ways that we can extend that solution across vertical markets so that we don't have all of our eggs in one basket, that we're doing work with financial services, with insurance companies, with retailers, with loyalty companies, travel companies, subscription services companies. It's really important to have that diversity. And last but not least, really important is making investments that help our customers sleep better at night. And the technology that we've invested in helps us sleep better and helps our customers sleep better. And that's all I've got.
Hey, thanks so much, Deborah. That's great insight. And now what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn it over to Frank Oliveri, and he's going to share with us what Williams Lee has done relative to deploying strategies to build new revenue streams. So with that, Frank, take it away.
Thank you, and thanks again to OSE and InfoTrends for their partnership and sponsorship in this. And thanks, everybody, for attending. So I want to spend a few minutes today talking about Williams Lee briefly. We probably spend, you know, less than most companies our size in marketing and brand awareness, but we're quite a sizable business, and it's important to understand what it is we do. The landscape driving change, the general challenges, and the challenges with managing marketing solutions, as defined by us, and we'll explain that shortly. And then the evolution, responding to market demands, and our strategy recommendation towards the end, and kind of our view. I'm not going to spend too much time on me. My background is very unconventional. An engineer by trade, left engineering, entered the print industry, and got into the business side of printing, and was asked to start up a business in America for Williams Lee, which at the time was really a print management, a kind of mundane print management solution that has turned into something much more, which we'll talk about shortly. Relative to Williams Lee, there's a few points we should probably just cover quickly. We're a global business process outsourcing company, or you've heard the term BPO. The way we define that is a lift and shift of a business process for us to manage and run more efficiently and more effectively because the client has deemed that process maybe not core or under-resourced or under-invested. And that is why a company, you know, whether it's a major company or a mid-cap company, would want to do business with a BPO company. We have a consultative approach, so we have a very heavy front-end consulting approach to analyzing, reengineering, and managing future state processes. We have a 192-year heritage, so we haven't, we're not a new company. We've been around this industry for some time. It's a $2-plus billion business with a $70 billion principal investor in Deutsche Post DHL. A global footprint with 900-plus sites in 39 different countries, approximately 10,500 employees worldwide. 3,500 of those employees are in America or in the Americas, and I would say that 80% of those employees have come from our clients in the process of outsourcing the business process. They've come along with us, and they are some of the best and brightest talent we have, so there's a talent acquisition strategy inherent in our solution. Unique experience in building customized right-shore solutions for our clients. We're industry-focused delivery teams, so we have dedicated people focused on the retail, CPG, financial services, which would include insurance, investment banking, retail banking, and card services, publishing, automotive, life science, and there's direct response embedded in there as well. Partnered in many of the world's most demanding and leading organizations, as well as source supply groups across the globe. The marketing supply chain solution is specific to the following commodities: commercial print fulfillment, point of sale, point of purchase, packaging, circular print, prepress, paper, logistics. When we first started this business, it was predominantly a business focused on the B2C profiles. I think we've now proven that with some of these other commodities, we play as well, just as well in the B2B space. And then the global creative services, we have 59 studios, 1,200 design staff, onshore and offshore solutions, and the ability to own campaign design and execution through fulfillment all the way to delivery. I think just reading
Frank,
off the...
I just have a real quick question for you.
Sure.
Does your account teams are vertically focused. Does that vertical focus make you more productive both in the selling and implementation side?
I think the real strategy behind that, Barb, is that it focuses us really on the delivery and execution side. So we're strategically aligned by industry vertical to ensure we give the best cultural alignment, execution and delivery for our customers. When we go to the market to sell, and we'll talk about that later, it's a small sales organization with a robust consulting and implementation organization that really is industry agnostic.
Okay.
So when we need subject matter expertise, we go into the business, but the sales organization and the consulting organization is slightly different.
Okay, great.
Okay?
Yep.
So the next slide you'll see is really the big picture client challenges as we've seen it. So the past challenges of a corporation might have sounded something like, you know, we want to get one variation of a common message out to the marketplace, and we have the option of two or three media channels, maybe TV, print, some other form, and that will be embedded. That base principle will be embedded in a marketing strategy. Today's challenges, as we all know, are quite more complicated than that. There are multiple messages right now that a corporation is looking to curtail, sometimes to region, sometimes cultural, which then forces multiple versions of one message. So, for example, we have a customer that wants to compete, a large retail customer that wants to compete regionally with some of the larger grocers. So they're going to take their form of media, whatever it might be, and curtail it to compete on a level playing field in that region, for example. There's also a multitude of media. So we've talked about it. You see it on the ring, the social media, the print, the digital, TV apps, website. We saw, as all this was coming and we started our business, we saw this as a real opportunity. The more of these multimedia channels came out, the real opportunity was, how can we build from a print management business, which, you know, back in, you know, early part of the decade, it was really the previous decade was really the strategy. We wanted to build the best execution delivery print management organization using BPO principles around process reengineering and change management. We knew that was our core area of expertise. What we have seen and have evolved into, and we'll talk a bit more about shortly, is we want to be the leader in marketing supply chain utilities for major organizations. So that we see that as defined. Sorry for the animation there. We see that as defined on the next slide. Let me spend a minute on this slide first. So what that forced our model into was the print outsourcing, cumbersome, challenging to identify the opportunity, minimal players in the market, so not many folks were really clear on what our proposition was when we first entered the marketplace. It was challenging to get sponsorship because it was still very new. I mean, a lot of the sales, big portions of the sales process were giving seminars on how to actually outsource your print. The creative developed and executed by the agencies. The future state is really an opportunity for significant savings. Consultants now helping driving the market change. Increase the need to manage full execution cycle from creative to production, obviously multi-channel global adaptation, and still changing for clients still challenging for clients to tackle alone. When we flip to the next slide, it's really the market, the space we defined, and it's most clearly depicted here. So as a business that sole focus is to be the best at execution and delivery, We don't want to play in the place of overall positioning and strategy. That's best suited for the large agencies, the large creative agencies, which many corporations employ. We see ourselves in the space where we draw a line between creative and creative production, and we call it adaptation production design. You'd know it as tactical design, from brand guidelines and toolkits to versioning of message and specific targets, through to creative production, which would be resizing, layout changes, imaging, text amendments, artwork amendments, over to print management, which is where we've built the business around pre-media, digital, print, paper, postage, fulfillment. And then we would draw the line there. Now, having a parent company as DPDHL, we do go over that line into logistics space. But that real focused area is really the utility we see the need for in the marketplace, where we built a new revenue stream and kind of through an evolution of our business. And we did it through an acquisition. We acquire the world's largest production agency that will enable us to go into, if you would imagine a business, you know, when you see the IWCO profile, which is very impressive, if you look at the Williams Lee client profile, you know, to make up the just over $700 million in revenue for the business I lead, it's on the back of 16 clients at the end of the day. They're large transformational deals that are done inside a marketing supply chain, where you're taking over the process from that creative production all the way through to, in many cases, distribution and delivery. And those teams on the ground are dedicated to delivering that service and are really consulting every day on projects and campaigns all the way at the front end to ensure what is manufactured on the back end has real thought process and a cost, you know, a real focus on cost in many cases. And many of our clients are cost is second or tertiary, and they're focused on speed to market or risk mitigation to a brand. So that is the space we have defined and kind of built a new revenue stream for our business here and see it as market leading.
Hey, so, Frank, you look at this, when you look at that grid on the preceding page, you also outsource and have partners that help you in the delivery of the service that you're project managing. What pieces does Williams Lee do themselves, and where do you use partners?
So we have no physical assets relative to the printing or manufacturing or distribution. So we don't own trucks, we don't own presses, we don't own inserters. We own, really, our main precious asset is the people and the talent that we have, and a methodology really on the front end around consulting, and on the back end that we generate confidence for our customers. So it's really of the people at the end of the day and the expertise under a methodology that really is the asset we own.
Yeah, okay.
So your partners are all the way throughout.
Okay, terrific. Thank you.
So with all that said, what do we deliver? It's highly customized client-focused solutions. These are 8-month to 10-month sales cycles. So you're talking about a business that will execute, you know, 3 to 4, in some cases 5, large transformational deals a year. They're real needle movers. They're long-term contracts. They're brought on by thought leadership and methodology for transformation and controlled change management. Full accountability of the process resides on the Williams Lee team. Talent transfer, along with talent acquisition and talent retention, is you know, paramount in a business like this. Broad capability set, subject matter expertise by vertical industry. We discussed that earlier. Strategic sourcing is fundamental. So here's another area to answer Bob's question: is partnerships. So we have strategic partners where we aggregate our spend to try to generate growth for our partners. Centralized teams that develop and execute strategies that we read out and are approved by our clients. And then we have innovation, which is continuous review of new technologies and capabilities. And this could range from bringing on a partner with a cutting-edge technology to developing or investing in a new technology. Innovation also comes in our model through something as simple as people on site with a team who are managing point-of-sale materials that realize the people on the other end of those point-of-sale materials are not packaging engineers or people from the print industry, they're business people. So how you manufacture and design that so that when those people actually deploy it and put it into place, it takes them 2 minutes of their day rather than, you know, an hour and 15 minutes to set it up. Results-driven solutions are fully transparent in visibility. In many cases, we're bringing transparency and visibility to a process that sat in the back office of a major corporation where they were spending hundreds of millions of dollars on items that actually they had no real measurement or metric on the return on investment. Flexible delivery and pricing models, obviously we see ourselves as process experts, so efficient processes are the end product to all of our solutions and immediate long-term savings for all of our customers. How do vendor partners, suppliers benefit from a partnership from Williams-Lee? It presents another channel for growth. It's not direct to the client. While we don't wall our supply partners off from our clients, we realize they don't have a direct end-user relationship with them. So it's an indirect channel. We've seen this evolve in the paper market, where the mills used to do business with customers directly, and then the merchants stepped in. So it's kind of an indirect channel. There's portfolio diversification in that. In many cases, it's more predictable revenue. There's workflow management. Hopefully, there's greater control over the types of jobs that those supply partners would opt to take or agree to take. Brand recognition, risk mitigation, investment opportunity, and obviously global expansion are all benefits as well. When you think about our client benefits, it's really offering them a global operating platform and a management structure, again, for a piece of their business process, whereas it's business essential and they spend a lot of money, but isn't their unit of competitive advantage. It offers them a centralized creative production, print spend aggregated with a wider client base. So if you are client X and you have $30 million of spend under management, whether it's print or print-related, you can aggregate that by like commodity types with your partners to help them grow and drive better price points in the marketplace. Increased transparency and visibility we spoke about, cost predictability, flexibility and scale, resource allocation improvements, improved logistics and warehousing functions, phase transformational and comprehensive change management strategy. We're hired in several cases, case studies we have, where companies were one company was buying the other and they were stitching the two companies together through the supply chain, and they hired Williams-Lee to do that. So we were the catalyst to change and drive a cultural shift inside their business. And then, of course, innovation and continual delivery of cutting-edge solutions is absolutely paramount to be the best at this. Just bringing it home here, there's a couple of case studies, and I'm not going to read them word for word, but we have an arrangement with one of the world's largest global retailers, where their second most effective means of increasing store traffic was their retail circular. The one thing they were telling us was that the business process was so inefficient that they wanted to get to one circular event a week, which would be 52 a year. They were able to do 24, and they were really struggling. So we actually re-engineered the process so they can have many more of those events a year, and whether at 52 or not, they do way more than 24 today. And they actually, so it improved their speed to market, improved their quality, and oddly enough, their Black Friday circular, we enhanced the security on that as well. So the cost savings at the top line of the previous slide was really a 26% on $113 million, but for some of these corporations, while those numbers are staggering, they're kind of rounding errors. It's really what you can drive for them on the revenue acquisition side or the revenue into the business side that's really more important. I think the last piece, and then I'll hand it back over to Barb, a top three financial services company, we've been able to drive cost out of their supply chain. We offered them a guarantee. We've enhanced the service, provided continuous process improvement, mitigated risk, ensured brand compliance and integrity. This is sponsored at a marketing level. And, you know, at the end of the day, we were able to drive significant value for them that's probably nowhere on that sheet, which would be, you know, how many customers. Were we able to help them increase their acquisition rate through their customer base? So just last slide to close out. our approach at the end is really outsourcing is a game changer. This is not a model where we leverage labor arbitrage. That is nowhere in the business that we run today. This is a business that manages significant sustainable cost savings throughout a supply chain that's not just print. It's across multiple avenues within the supply chain, the marketing supply chain, and more. We see the value really upstream in the creative piece, creating efficiency through process reengineering, greater visibility into where and how marketing dollars are spent, and brand consistency across functional areas, geographies, and media. And I'd close by saying I can't emphasize enough that when somebody would ask me, what's the biggest challenge you've had in building a business just short of $1 billion in 6 years? It's all about the people and all about the talent. I think Deborah said it well. You can't teach salespeople to sell. Either they can sell or not. You can create a great value proposition. We have a completely different sales organization than the day we started, and it's because we've evolved our business model. So Barb, back over to
couple
you. I
got a couple quick questions for you. So basically, I'm going to say this. You and Deborah are both in the print outsourcing business. Your approach is very different. Now, let me ask you, one of the questions that came in was, you obviously have a lot of print work, and you obviously are continually looking for partners. So the people that are listening to this webinar could be prospective partners of yours. How do you select partners? How do you dole out print across the network of folks that you use, whether it's brochures or flyers or within those processes? Could you share with the audience that part of it?
Sure. So to start on the Williams Lee vendor panel, you have to pass a 400 plus point audit that would be deployed by our strategic sourcing organization. This organization would, so that audit is not is to ensure we're doing business with fiscally strong companies, because obviously we're building them and putting them into the Fortune 100 supply chain. So they got to be fiscally stable. They've got to have the right level of investment. And then and not everybody passes that audit. If you pass that audit, you qualify to be on the Williams Lee vendor panel. At that point, you'll get slotted into the strategic sourcing organization based on your capability set. So we will log your profile of plant capability into our database, and you will be interviewed by our strategic sourcing folks, and then called by them on an opportunity by opportunity basis to start. Now, some of them who have started with us from the very beginning have been involved in almost every one of the opportunities. Some have started at various points of our evolution, but that's really how the process goes. It's really a qualifying. If the audit isn't passed, we would give you recommendations as to how what you would need to do. In some cases, you might have a really, really innovative solution that we want to bring forward to one of our clients, but you might not have passed a certain part of that audit. We would help you pass it to get you on the panel. We've made investments in strategic sourcing partners to help them get through that. So it's really a consultative approach to try to get through the audit, but that's how you would get on the panel.
Okay. Now, let me ask you a little different question, and I think our audience may have a bit of a gap, but in understanding that based on a couple of questions I've gotten in. But in essence, and I'm going to start with Deborah. Deborah, I mean, you're in the outsourcing business. Your approach is different in terms of you have a direct sales force and you do the print, but they outsource direct marketing to you. You're basically...
I think we would not think of ourselves as being in the outsourcing business. We have the equipment that Frank said he doesn't have.
Right. I was going to get to that. You're basically a provider. What I say is that you have clients, and they'll, in essence, you're doing their direct marketing work. Frank's taken that same approach, and he's really doing the marketing supply chain management for his clients. You actually are a partner for some of the work that Frank does. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And so the message inside of this, when you take a look at it, is Frank's dealing with it. I'm going to say this in a nice way, the supply chain side. Deborah does a lot of work direct, but also partners with Williams Lee in terms of providing content and material through Williams Lee to some of their end customers. Is that a good way of looking at the value chain? I'm going to ask that of Frank.
That's a great way of looking at it.
I think it's exactly the right way of looking at it in the end. The thing to not take away is that Williams Lee has the answer to every problem on their own. The thing to take away is that Williams Lee has a solution set and a methodology with which to go into large corporations to map a process to come out on the other end with a better process to align to achieve the client's strategic objectives, and then to match the needs of that solution with the marketplace. And obviously IWCO is the leader in that for the direct marketing space.
Okay, great. And then the next quick question that I have is somebody came back and said, is there a point of contact at Williams Lee where they could talk to somebody to understand what it would take to become a partner of yours?
Yeah, I think to make it easy, why don't you just put my name and you can email me and I'll route you to our chief of strategic sourcing, which is a gentleman named Edward Stone. But
okay.
You can send it to me.
Okay, terrific. Well, I'm going to wrap up just real quickly with a couple of recommendations and conclusions. And I think what you heard from both Deborah and from Frank is that it's really time to rethink a lot of your strategies. And what you've got is, you know, the balance of power is changed between the buyer and the seller. You're seeing, you know, the economy and technological advances and cultural changes that are transforming business opportunities. And what you're seeing is, you know, companies like Williams Lee and IWCO that are working with their clients to deliver better campaigns, by the way, regardless of the media type, whether it's print, it's mobile, it's online, or it's social. And what you're finding is that, you know, they need to communicate with customers and prospects throughout multiple channels. You heard Frank talk a lot about time to market, as you did Deb. And so, Deborah, so you need to sit down and make sure that you've got, you know, communication strategies that are meeting the requirements of those marketing executives. And so just to step back and think about the business models and the new revenue opportunities, we're at a point where the industry is transforming. And what you're seeing is it opens up a lot of opportunity for people to basically, you know, reinvent. You're seeing, and Frank talked about, well, he's got the onboarding teams focused on some verticals, and Deborah, who narrowed down the client base that they were delivering so they could add specialization to the services that they were offering. The service portfolio needs to be correct to drive the kind of business that you're looking for. It's got to be integrated. And I think most importantly, what we all need to look at is that you want to be much like Deborah and Frank, that trusted advisor, and be strategically important to your customer base. I want to thank everybody for their time and attention today. If we didn't get to your questions, I will make sure that there's follow-up. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great rest of the day, and thank you to both Deborah and Frank.